This is a production of Cornell University.
Time has arrived. We'll go ahead and get started if everybody wants to take their seats or not. I mean, please get food. So in case you didn't know, this is a very special meeting. I'm very excited to welcome President Pollack here today. We'll be with us for the morning. Also, we have Vice President Molina and Vice President Opperman here.
That's my chief of staff.
I'm sorry, yes. So I'm just going to say a few words, and then we will, as per the agenda, go into some statements by our committee chairs. So I really want all, the only thing I want to say very briefly is, you know, as many of you know, shared governance is such an important thing, and it's also, when it comes to under the context of staff involvement, it's fairly unique and a wonderful opportunity. I really feel like this is one of the things that bind us together as a community at Cornell. And I really just want to relate that we absolutely appreciate so much you being here with us and taking this time. So with that, I think we'll just go into the committee chairs. We'll have a few remarks. So Carrie Sanzone is online. She's remoting in. So Carrie, feel free to go ahead.
Hey everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm the chair of the Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee. And so those are our three pillars of activity, I guess. We were pretty busy this summer coordinating outreach events with staff. We were helping out at High Five Red Day, scooping ice cream, and partnered with Cheryl McGraw in HR to sponsor our first lunchtime lawn games, which by all accounts was a pretty big hit. Apparently the staff loved cornhole. And most recently we did a tabling event and co-sponsored the staff development day. And pretty good results. I'm excited to say that through that outreach, we have a few potential new members to join us, and they're actually, hopefully they're here today. And we'll be voting later today, but so far so good outreach wise. This month our main gig is to plan and promote the president's address to staff, which we're all excited about, and we'll hear more about those details later. But we're really focused on getting the word out, filling the auditorium, and having a great event. So in conjunction, we'll be doing our first award of the year, the EA Appreciation Award. And so we've been busy, and we'll be launching the George Peter Award nominations this fall as well. So we've got a lot going on, and also on our list is to figure out how we can best do outreach with new staff members. So that's a focus area of ours, and we'll be hopefully working with HR on that.
Thank you, Carrie. Our Employee Education and Development Committee, Marcy, you want to go ahead?
Yep. So we did have a meeting back in July, a preliminary meeting, and we will be meeting again, I think, next week. I was just trying to see. Hopefully meeting more regularly. Basically we wanted to promote all the programs that we have. There are some great programs that are in place, like the Cornell Tuition Reimbursement Program. And then also the EVP program only has 100, we found out last year from the committee that they only have 146 in the graduate program and 13 in the undergrad.
I'm sorry, can you tell me what EVP is?
I'm sorry?
What is EVP?
Employee
Development. Okay. Anyways, I just didn't know the acronym. Thank you.
So we also wanted to think about interviewing and publicizing success stories to just promote it more, to get more people involved in it. Maybe people aren't aware. Some other thoughts that came out of this meeting, our first meeting, was to look at maybe making CU Learn multilingual, if that's an option. I guess there was some interest in that. Also, something of a less serious note of education to learn more about Cornell. Maybe have some type of tours or classes or something. I don't know what it would look like, but something to learn about the history and the traditions of Cornell, because there's a lot that, you know, even people that have been here for so many years may not know as much about Cornell. I know I don't. Also, we discussed Workday has a lot of tools in it, how to develop, move up, explore, perhaps publicize that more, get that a little bit. There's a lot that Workday does that a lot of people don't know. Also, mentoring the mentor and maybe making something a little bit more in onboarding for new employees to just let them know what is out there education-wise. So a lot of thoughts, a lot of things.
Thank you, Marcy. Is Christy? I think we'll, maybe she's running a little bit behind. Let's skip to the Benefits and Policy Committee. Anne?
So I am the new chair of the Benefits and Policy Committee, and we have not yet met. We have some continuing members and some new members, and we've just sent out a doodle for our first meeting. And we will hopefully be able to continue some of the issues that were raised last year. We have some ongoing discussions on some of the issues that we've heard through the survey and through comments by various staff members that we've been in touch with. And this is concerns around, you know, Cornell has wonderful benefits, but they're not always equally accessible to everyone because it's dependent on supervisor discretion. And so this is an issue that we see ongoing. We'll talk about that at the Benefits and Policy Committee. Last year we talked about, I don't know if Tarek is here, but we had a long discussion about possible revisions to the vacation policy for newer employees. So we haven't quite resolved that. We'll pick that discussion up. And something that arose in the discussion about the vacation policy was that this body has representatives for employees who are new to Cornell. There's an affinity position for less than 5 years at Cornell. And so we think that we would also benefit from a position to represent employees who've been here for a very long time. So I would like to sort of explore expanding that option and creating a position for, say, somebody's employees who've been here for 15 or 20 years, just fill this so that they can feel like they're better represented. But so we will have our initial founding meeting soon. We'll get input from all the members on what sorts of issues we need to be addressing. And we'll take it from there. I'm looking forward to chairing this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Executive Committee. Hey.
Hi there. So again, I just want to thank you for coming here. I think this is a great opportunity to be able to engage with you in such an intimate forum. We are currently focusing on the President's Address to Staff. We have finalized time, a space, location, and we are drafting materials to send over to your office, and we're also moving forward. The next step will be marketing for the event. So these are all things that we've been working on and focusing on. Another focus for us this year has been taking some things that we've learned from last year, building on the things that we've done, and thinking about resources that we can move on for this year. So last year, we worked across, you know, campus with different units. We worked with transportation on the survey. We worked with Title IX on revamping their training materials. We worked with the Accreditation Committee for Middle States Accreditation. And I think that this kind of has been a great opportunity for people to be able to be a part of, you know, shared governance and be a part of these discussions that are happening on campus. I think also we've also learned that we need to better equip VA members with tools to be successful in terms of the way that we do outreach, in terms of the way we look at issue resolution. So we partnered with the Office of the Assemblies to develop this issue resolution decision tree, which we worked very closely with Gina with. She's done so much great work on this. And we've had discussions about maybe distributing this to other assemblies as well. So this is, would be a shared resource for not just us, but other units. We talked about data requests, and working through a lot of this process gives people a roadmap with how to engage with other units, how to do research, how to really be involved in the collaborative nature of shared governance. And we've worked on communication checklists. Carrie's done a lot to, you know, build tools for individuals here as it comes to communicating outward. So we're hoping that we'll have a good year this year, that we'll be able to give people, EA members, a way to look at issues in a collaborative, in a well-researched, in a well, you know, organized fashion. So that's kind of our update in terms of what we're working on and hopefully being able to be part of other conversations and work happening across campus, I think will be really helpful for us as well.
Thank you. And finally, our elections committee, Jessica Withers.
Hi. So our big thing right now is trying to fill incidental vacancies, and we have some candidates here. We'll be voting on them later in this meeting, hopefully filling about half of the MP seats. Our first committee meeting, though, will be next week. And I've talked with Adam a little bit about this. One of his goals is to have all of the EA seats filled. So I'll be talking with the committee about ways to reach out and engage employees in those constituencies of the seats that remain empty after today. So that'll be our first focus.
So it looks like Chris, you couldn't make it, but we'll circle back and maybe send something your way. With that, I think we'll just turn the floor over to you.
Well, first of all, I want to welcome everybody to the start of the school year. I want to thank you for having me. I want to thank you for the committee reports. Just a few comments that as I was jotting down as I went through. Carrie, I love the fact that you're doing outreach to new staff, and to the extent we can fold the new core values into that outreach, that would be really great. I really think we want to make sure that that's something everyone coming into our community has access to. Marcy, just a quick suggestion. If you're thinking about Cornell history, Isaac Primack, who is one of our long, long, long time faculty members and has written books, he loves to talk about Cornell history. He might be good idea. And you guys haven't really met yet, so I didn't have much, but I did just note I have to be real careful because we have a board committee called BNP, which is Buildings and Properties. So I need to make sure I don't confuse that with benefits and policies. Hey, really glad that you're working across boundaries. I think having five assemblies is great, but sometimes it's also a challenge, and as Craig and others know, there can be real duplication of effort. So especially this issue resolution tree, sharing that would be wonderful. And then finally, Jessica, I don't know if you guys are responsible for the employee elected trustee election or just for EA elections.
Just for EA elections.
Okay, so I don't have any comments on that. I will mention, you know, there were some snafus in the student elected trustee election last year. And the committee that's responsible for that on campus, along with the CBCG Committee on Board Composition and Governance, which is a standing committee of the Board of Trustees, are trying to put together some cleaner policies that will make the constituent elected trustee elections go more smoothly in the future. I also want to thank everyone who participated in MOVE-IN, and it could be by participated, I mean, you could have been a volunteer, you could be on the facility, you know, in facilities. Maybe you just changed your daily routine and parked somewhere else to make room for students. But it went remarkably smoothly this year. My chief of staff, Kelly, has a son who's a freshman, so she can attest to this. Everywhere I went, people just talked about how wonderfully smoothly MOVE-IN went. And I really want to thank any staff who were involved in that. So here's what I want to do. I want to give you some updates and then make sure we leave some time for questions. But there's a lot going on. So let me take a few minutes to tell you about that. I always want to start with academic distinction. That's the reason we're all here. That's the reason I'm here. That's the reason you're here. And that really means investing in our faculty. It means building on our breadth of excellence. It means supporting cross-disciplinary research. And it means attracting the very best and brightest students. A Cornell degree continues to be incredibly sought after. Last year, we had more than 49,000, approaching 50,000 applicants for 3,200 positions. I actually think that demand is almost too high. In the Dyson School, we're only admitting 4% of our applicants. That's not a good thing. I mean, we don't want to discourage students. That's not the point. And I'll talk in a minute about the North Campus residential expansion. Part of that is so that we can grow our student body and ease some of that pressure. The students we admit are spectacular. The faculty are stellar too. I'm just gonna read this list real quickly. It's like an eye chart, you don't have to pay attention, but just, I'm very proud of this, and hopefully you'll be proud of this too. Just in the last year, we had a MacArthur Fellow, a Guggenheim Fellow, two Sloan Fellows, two Simons Foundation Fellows, two inductees to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, two inductees to the National Academy of Science, one inductee to the National Academy of Engineering, one inductee to the National Academy of Inventors, 10 NSF Career Awards, a recipient of the very prestigious Wyndham Campbell Prize in Literature, and four PKs. These are National Science Foundation Presidential Early Career Awards. Both ends of the spectrum. National Academies are like the highest honor you can achieve as a scientist or an engineer or a humanist in the Academy of Arts and Sciences. Career awards are for new faculty. So we, all of us, are really supporting just the most amazing faculty. Funded research is core to our excellence. I don't know how many of you are in that. Does anyone here work on the research? So funded research is way up, up 7%, including, this doesn't apply to you guys, but including 23% increase in NIH funding at Weill Cornell Medicine. And we're really diversifying our research portfolio. We have a 20% increase from the Department of Energy and 13% from corporate funding. So we're not just relying on federal funding, and that's very important. And I also just want to say a quick word while I'm on academic distinction about our radical collaboration. So, you know, one of the things that makes Cornell Cornell and makes us so great is our extraordinary breadth, just extraordinary breadth. And one of the things that the provost has done is support what he calls these radical collaborations that bring together faculty from across the university. Let me just mention one new one to give you an example of what we're doing. We have one in digital agriculture. It connects faculty in biology and engineering and business and computer science and the social sciences. What it is, if you think about precision medicine, medicine that's targeted to each individual person, digital agriculture says to a farmer, let's put some sensors in your ground or with a drone overhead, you know, whatever kind of sensors there might be, and we're going to give you advice about how to have the highest crop yield while using the least amount of fertilizers and the least amount of water and so on. So we can begin to get more sustainable agriculture that can feed the 10 billion people that will be in this world by 2050. There's nowhere else in the world that has a world-class agriculture school and a top five computer and information science program. So this is the kind of thing we can do at Cornell, and we're trying to find those pockets and incentivize them. So there's a lot going on, and if people have questions, for example, about our new Institute of Politics and Global Affairs in Washington or about the social science initiative, I can answer those questions, but I want to move on so I make sure there's time for questions. I want to say a little bit about educational verve. We are really trying always to make our education as exciting and innovative and effective as possible. And effective is important. What we do in education is what we do everywhere else. We don't just try things. And okay, we tried them and that's it. We're actually measuring outcomes, and we're actually hiring faculty members. We call them DBERs, discipline-based educational researchers, who sit like in the biology department or in the economics department, and they're tenure track faculty or tenured faculty, but they study how students learn. Many of you have probably heard of the Active Learning Initiative. Active learning is where you flip the classroom, you have students read, and you know what you would normally do in a lecture, watch videos outside of class, and then you do hands-on learning with faculty members and TAs moving around the room in the classroom itself. And then we study the outcomes. And our pilot, I told you about this last year, the data continues to be really good. It's showing that everybody does better, everybody enjoys the course more, and the gap that we traditionally have seen between students who come from less well-resourced high school and students who come from wealthier communities and better resourced high schools, the outcomes change. And the confidence level, we used to see a huge gap in confidence, and that closes as well. So I'm very excited about that. We got a new donation of $5 million. That's allowed us to put out a whole lot of new grant proposals, and we're transforming 40 additional courses, which are gonna serve 4,500 students. Engage Cornell is also thriving. It's got sort of set targets for how many students will get Engage Learning, and they're ahead of all those targets. And we're also, you know, it's really core to our mission to engage globally. We've been global. The first class had students from Bulgaria, and I forget the other countries. 44% of our students travel abroad for education, before they graduate. We have a China center that's up and running. We are being very careful and responsive to government calls for us to worry about security. But look, we don't do classified research. Right? And what we're trying to do are build the bridges that will make global connections stronger and do good in the world. A couple of other things. As I mentioned, the North Campus residential expansion, the new dormitories on North Campus is underway. The foundation and excavations and the underground piping are in. There's a fraternity house up there that they had to do some abatement, asbestos abatement and demolition. That's nearing completion. The concrete foundation is well underway. To remind you, we're going to build 1,200 new beds. 800 will be a sophomore site, so we can bring sophomores in. That will open, we hope, by September 2021. And there's a new dining hall that will be the next year. And there's a first-year student site, which will have 1,200 student beds, plus 75 spaces for staff and RAs. Now, we've already been growing, so we're not growing by another 1,200 students. We're going to be growing by like another 700, a total, not each year, like across the four campuses, the four years. Over time, slowly, a few hundred a year. This project is going to help our on-campus housing supply, which you know is very tight. It's going to provide surge space so we can do deferred maintenance. It's going to let us pull in all the sophomores. So all freshmen and all sophomores will be required either to leave on campus or in affiliated housing like co-ops or fraternities. It's going to, as I mentioned earlier, let us grow our incoming class and relieve some of the pressure, for example, on Dyson. And we hope it will also do something to help ease pressure on the Ithaca housing market. I know the Ithaca housing market is a huge issue, probably for everyone in this room, everyone I talk to. We, of course, don't have direct control over the landlords at all. But when we build Maplewood and we build 2,000 spaces up on North Campus, more beds we're providing, the more market pressure there is on the landlords to hopefully up their game, lower costs, and also provide better housing. I do also want to mention that, I'll leave the details for questions if you have them, but we really are trying to build North Campus housing with sustainability in mind. And in fact, even though we're adding 700,000 net square feet, by the time it's built with what we're doing there and what we continue to do across campus, campus energy use is actually going to be lower than it is today. So as with everything we do, we're number eight or nine on the Princeton list of green campuses, well ahead of our IV. So, and, you know, it's a lot easier to be green in a place like Stanford where you have lots of sun. Two last quick things. I've already mentioned the core value statement. I really want to thank everybody. I know there was participation by all the assemblies. Mary was out meeting with everyone. It was a collaborative process. I'm very happy with how they came out. I think they are really going to be important to bringing people into the community and then for all of us to use when we make decisions. It's not like they're new, right? Core value, it's not like you were doing one thing and now you have some new values. These were our values, but we've codified them and we've articulated them and we can point to them when we make decisions. So that's important. And finally, I want to give you a quick update on the campus code of conduct because that's something people ask me about a lot. They've asked me about that since I got here 2.5 years ago. I don't have direct responsibility for the code of conduct. That belongs to the University Assembly. Unfortunately, they did not make much progress on it over the past 2 years, but I've had some very, very good positive conversations with Bob Howarth, the new chair of the UA. He and Logan, I'm sorry, I can't remember Logan's name. What is it?
Kenny.
Logan Kenny, who is a 2L, a law student, and the chair of the CJC, actually have been working with general counsel. It's really hard to just pull off a code, right, without any sort of training. So they're working together. General counsel is drafting some things. They're actually at a UA meeting yesterday, I don't know why, and they're taking it to the UA for refinement. And we're trying to work very collaboratively with a plan to have a new code out no later than the end of this year. The students absolutely are demanding it, and I support them. That is my update. Sorry to have gone on, but it's the beginning of the year and there's a lot going on. So, and I can take questions.
Questions for President Paul?
Yeah, Christopher.
Sure. So this is more a little bit of a UA question, but I'm in between both of them. Okay. And it's related to the code. Uh-huh. The draft that we saw specifically changed the campus code, which is everybody on campus, employees, faculty, and staff, and students. And then the revision we got was, this should be a student code. Do you think that pursuing, and I'm sure we could talk about this in a different forum, pursuing it in that way and breaking it apart, because I think there is a good thing. Those core values already sort of gives us an idea about how one should live and participate on campus. But it seemed like even the professionals had a hard time tackling the fact that this is supposed to apply to everybody. Yeah.
So it's a really good question. It's a really good question. Most campuses, the overwhelming majority of campuses, have a student code of conduct. And then separately from that, either a staff and faculty or one of the other. Staff and faculty are employees. There are sort of employee-employer relationship policies that don't apply to students. Faculty have tenure protections. The overwhelming majority of uses of the campus code in practice are for students. I'm told that like maybe two or three times a year they apply to faculty or staff. And you know, one of the things that made the code so complicated and so hard for anyone to read was it tries to include processes that they have to be one thing for students and one thing for faculty and one thing for staff, and it tried to tangle it all up. Now, the behavioral expectations that are in the student code, so one of the things that we're trying to do with the code to make it clearer is to separate out the behavioral expectations, things like you can't carry a gun on campus or you can't use illegal drugs or whatever, from the, this is the process we use, this is how the JA works, this is what happens if you're accused of violating those. I think that most of the behavioral stuff applies to everyone, but in fact, it's already mostly built into faculty and staff policy. So I think it's cleaner to go that way. What I said to Bob and to Logan, and I will reiterate for this group, is the efforts to update the code have zero. I'll give you one small caveat, but with a small caveat, I have zero interest in taking away faculty or student or staff rights. That's not the point of this at all. I think shared governance works incredibly well here. And I think that separating this out is being done as a matter of thing. So I'm kind of in the weeds, but I might as well tell you this. The one place where there is an issue is the reporting line of the judicial administrator. First of all, the judicial administrator reports to a committee, which is, we have to professionalize it. Having it report to a committee with a rotating chair and having HR done it, I think is not a good thing. And secondly, I have zero oversight of that. And 99.9% of the time, I want zero oversight of that. But it's my responsibility to keep this campus calm. And if the JA, you know, suppose there's some horrible incident, like when I had been here a few months and there was that episode in college, suppose the JA had just decided, no, there's no violation here. If I have no authority at all at the end of the day, I have no way. I can't carry out my responsibility. So I think we need to adjust that. But that's the, you know, you do that under extraordinary circumstances. You have a requirement to disclose immediately why the community and so on. But I don't think I can have responsibility for some small part there.
Other questions?
I had a question. Herb Sheldon from the retiree committee. I'm interested in hearing what your focus is long distance and short term, what issues you're dealing with besides the map you gave us.
Yeah. So sort of at the top of my agenda for the coming year are two things. So I'm going to give you the coming year, but these are all multi-year things. One is the social science initiative. The provost is point on that, but we've always had very, very strong social sciences, but very diffuse. And their strength is not recognized externally, which makes it harder to track people or keep that up. And my understanding is that there have been decades of studies by the faculty as to what we should do about the social sciences. But we finally have some very specific, concrete recommendations, some of which have been implemented and some of whose implementations are being studied. So that's a big focus. A second big focus for me is what I call external education. We have eCornell, which does online education. We have executive education in a bunch of different schools, notably the Johnson School, the ILR, and engineering panels. We have certain kinds of certificate programs. We have a whole host of programs, face-to-face and online and hybrid, that aren't terribly well coordinated. And now we have the Verizon Executive Education Center coming online in New York City. And so I think we need to coordinate for them better, to think more about how we can have a flow of ideas back and forth between external education and what we do for our students, how we can use, this isn't just about technology, but how we can use technology. That's a second area. A third big area for me is Cornell Tech and New York City. So making sure that Cornell Tech continues to thrive, but also tightening the connections. You know, I've said this to this group before, but when I got here, everyone was really kind of worried, intentionally the university is going to turn. So I think people are over that. People realize that we're always going to nurture it. It's our home, but there's so many opportunities that for faculty and staff and students that connecting those campuses is really important. And I can mention a bunch more, but let me just mention one more, which is much less sort of interesting and about our educational research mission, but it's very important. And that is changing our culture of compliance. We have recently been hit with several federal investigations. We're just not doing, I don't want to add a lot of bureaucracy. We want to do this in a streamlined way, but we're just not. We need to develop something more of a culture of compliance. There's lots more, but maybe that gives you a start.
Anyone else? Okay.
So we spoke a little bit about this with Mary Opperman when she came over to our retreat. But talking about core values, can you give us some examples of how, you know, you've used core values in your work, you've applied it recently?
Asa? Yeah, I mean, for me, the core value, there's two uses for the core values. One, I mentioned, I'm sorry, I forget your name, Marcy. One I've already mentioned with Marcy, which is, I do think it's really helpful when people join our community to give them a sense of what's expected. And it's not that those core values are terribly surprising. They are to some extent unique, but they tie to Cornell in certain sorts of ways that they might not tie elsewhere. But I think it is really helpful to set expectations for other people. The second is when I need to make decisions about it's really helpful. I always go back to what are the core values that underlie this. And I always find that the most difficult decisions, the ones that are easy, you can point to a core value and say, okay, this applies here. The ones that are hard is when there's a clash between core values. And in a university setting, the example of that comes up over and over and over again is around expressions, where there is a clash between our commitment to free expression and free speech and our commitment to having a welcoming community of belonging. And so it's always, when I'm faced with those kinds of decisions, it's just always helpful to think about those values and how they apply here and how you trade them off against each other.
We've got time for one more. Anyone else?
I have a question. Sorry.
Sorry.
Just popped out of nowhere occasionally. This is maybe more rhetorical, but so touching back on the North Campus expansion and the issue of staff connectedness, which we talked about a lot last year with the Staff Conversations Initiative. I was at the North Campus Forum and someone asked about, I guess we were talking about how this project will, like you said, take the pressure off of potentially the local housing, maybe hopefully make housing more affordable. And I was just wondering how, I know recently leases were made available for Maplewood to staff, benefits eligible staff. And so I was wondering what was the response to that? Were staff flocking to do that? How do we know how many staff, since we know that a lot of them live outside of Ithaca or outside of Tompkins even, do we know how many staff would want to move closer if they could, if it were affordable? I'm just toying with that idea. Would that, you know, the geolocation help the connectedness being closer? Do we track that at all, or do
I'm going to turn this over to Mary because I actually don't know the answer, but I think she does.
Yeah. So related to Maplewood, we did have quite a number of apartments that we made available to faculty and staff. They weren't all used, so we did give back to Maplewood the rest, and they went to students. But it's also, this is only the second year we've done that. And so I think they'll continue to offer us apartments. And over time, I think that uptick will be there. In terms of your other question, though, about geographic interest, we did a housing survey a few years ago. And what we found was that we have a sort of a split interest. So we have people that their families live outside of Ithaca. That's where they want to stay. Their interest is in transportation opportunities and things like that. Some of our newer employees who are not connected in any familial way to Ithaca are much more interested in renting, not buying, and renting close to campus. So we have a big population of staff. So we have need for both.
Thank you.
Thank you again, and I will see you all at the place of assembly presentation, speech, whatever.
Thank you so much. All right. So very briefly, we're going to move on in the agenda to the update on the president's address to staff. Just some of the details.
Okay. So we have, I believe in the past, we've provided a date and we've asked everyone to bookmark this date. So we have finalized, it will be October 10th, 2019. It will be from 1 to 2 at Schwartz Auditorium. So that will be the date, time, and place. Right now, the executive committee is working through the details of what we would like the president to maybe touch on, some key pain points that we've heard throughout. You know, the data that we've collected through staff conversations, through informal discussion, through surveys. We're hoping that we'll have attendance be as good as it was in years past. I mean, we'll see. We are moving the time, so we are aware that we might lose some individuals there. And we're hoping that by next week, we'll be able to provide communication to the president's office in regards to these details. We'll be working together on some final drafts. So that is the update for now. Does anybody have questions?
Yes. I didn't catch the time.
It will be from 1 to 2.
Welcome.
And that's Schwartz Auditorium in Rockefeller Hall.
So yeah.
It's not the Schwartz Center down in College Town. It's actually.
Yeah.
I got confused by that too. I was looking at two different places.
Thank you. I'll look Craig.
Yeah. and just to piggyback off that, it would be great if we could fill the room with red employee assembly shirts, and we'll probably have some need for volunteer help at the event. Also, as Carrie and the communications committee is helping promote the event, please, this is no secret now, please feel free to tell your constituents, relay this information to anyone, any relevant parties that you have access to. Because it is it is at a different time than what we usually have it, we're going to probably have to really up our promotion and communications game to get the room filled as best as possible. So just something to keep in mind. Marcy?
Are we, two things. Is it where we hit last year?
No.
Okay.
Different venue.
Are we offering lunch?
The details are still being worked out, but probably based on the time, probably not a full lunch like last year. But we'll definitely... we'll definitely provide those details as we finalize. And we take any suggestions or anything. We're not doing this in a vacuum. Yeah.
But was there a reason for the switch?
Scheduling with the president's office. It's just a busy time that happened something this year. We don't agree on the specifics. Anything else? Okay.
I can expand on that in case it's the president typically has done it during fall break. She was not available then, and once. This event was outside of that sort of slower time frame. It was very difficult to find a venue that wasn't being used for an academic space. So, thanks to the Department of Physics.
Yes. Very much appreciate the support.
Is it as big as a venue as the other place? I would suggest we offer lunch just to get an incentive for people to come.
Well, the caveat to that is that we never get the lunch out until at the end, and that's 2:00. So the idea is that people will have already eaten, and that's really a huge chunk of our budget that would be going to waste, potentially.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know if this is possible, but if HR or someone can send a notice out to managers and supervisors requesting that they allow their employees to attend this event, because since it is outside of like most people's lunch break, it would be on work time. Mm-hmm. And as we know from our committee, a lot of there's a lot of issues with that.
I'm glad you brought that up. We actually made that request, and they seem willing to do that, actually. So yeah, we will hopefully get an HR email that also promotes it and has, you know, the regular caveat of supervisors and managers are encouraged to allow their staff to attend. So thank you for bringing that up. I wanted to mention that. Yep.
I don't know what the budget is, but maybe a way to attract people without having to do a lunch is to have like a coupon for the dining services for ice cream or sandwich or something.
It's not a bad idea.
I'm just sending hey an email to say let's connect and see. As the student campus life representative, dining is part of my division, and I am in Cornell Dining as well. We're always looking for opportunities to promote what we do and how we do it. So there may be some opportunities to partner there. So I'm literally just writing that email.
Thank you, Brandon. That's awesome. If there are no other questions, let's move on to the agenda. We've got our election for our and seating of our new members. So. For this section, we are going to go into executive, or I would like to make a motion that we move into executive session since there will be a period of closed debate. So can I get a motion? And a second by Hey. Let's take a vote on this. All those in favor of moving into executive session, please raise your placards. All right. So at this moment, I would like to ask all non-members, except for the candidates, to please leave the room, and also anybody online who is not a member, we're good to go. Okay. So, essentially, just like many of you have seen before, what we're going to do is ask I'm the chair of the Employee Assembly for the 2019-2020 term, but I am also the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences representative. I've been on the EA for about 2 years. I'm a relatively new employee, actually, to Cornell. I've only been at Cornell for a little over 2 years. I come from Illinois. We just moved to the state a few years ago, my wife and I. And this has been one of the top experience of for me since moving to this state, this area. This is a wonderful group, a wonderful organization, great people, and I think you're going to have a really excellent time here on the EA. So. Once again, welcome and thank you for joining. So,
Brandon, do we need to welcome the folks back? Or are we still in?
Oh, yeah, everybody come back. Sorry.
I didn't know if there was anybody. I saw one person leave and I didn't know if.
Because
we did the executive.
Was there anybody else out there?
Karen.
Oh, Karen just had to go.
Okay. I just wanted
good
to
call.
Make sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how this executive thing works.
Not you.
Even not you. Totally good.
My name is Anthony McCabe. I go by Tony. I'm building care manager on the West Campus. So we take care of all the buildings down the hill. I'm the vice chair for operations and finance. I'm new to the committee. Any feedback that I can get from any of the committee chairs or members of things that I can do to assist in any way, I'm pretty much always available. I think one of the things being new that I would have liked to see coming in, Carrie developed an instrument that helps to define your constituents, so to speak. So I'm the FCS staff representative. I think there's like over 7,000 staff. So who are they? So I've grappled with that. How do I even identify the people represented in the instrument that Carrie has set up to be filled out will help identify a lot of logistical things, like are there periodic meetings within this group, or how many distinct groups are there, and who is the leadership of that group? So that'll be very helpful. That'd be one of my priorities going forward, is to get that information established.
My name is Ellen Miller. I work in the Weill Institute. As a research administrator, and on the employee assembly, I am the non-exempt employee representative. I'm also on the benefit and policy committee and the communications committee. And it's my second year on the assembly, and I just really enjoy being involved and getting involved in as much as I can around campus. For me, my constituency is obviously huge. So I've just been trying to be as involved as possible in as many events as I can around campus and just engaging and talking with people and learning everything I can learn and sharing.
I am Ann C. Ridding. I'm the ILR rep on the EA, so it's a little easier for me. My constituency is fairly contained and, you know, like known. So I have, this is my second year on the EA. I am now for the first time chairing the Benefits and Policy Committee. If any of you new guys are interested, love to have you join. And I'd be happy to tell you more for what it is that we do. And I have been at Cornell for more than 30 years. So I've worked in a bunch of different places around campus and landed up in ILR. And this is a great opportunity to have some direct input with possibly some impact that could be meaningful. So appreciate all of you taking the time to join us.
I'm Herb Sheldon, and I'm the first retiree representative. When I was retiring, I understood that the EA didn't have a retiree representative, and I made the suggestion that would be a good idea, and President Pollack agreed. And so I said, gee, would you like the seat? Which I hadn't really thought of, and I opened my big mouth. I've been doing this, and it will be replaced at the next election. But it's, we're trying to get information from the retirees and the employees back and forth. I hope to be involved with the welfare committee. Retirement choices are important with the perspective of having retired. Yes, sir.
I'm David Heiner. I am the LGBTQ plus representative at large. This is my second year on the assembly. I've been at Cornell for a little over 11 years. I work at Human Ecology as an applications developer. I also sit on the University Assembly, along with, I'm going to steal your thunder, Chris Barth over here. I am also the chair of the CWC, or the Campus Welfare Committee, if you're looking to get more involved. I know there's a lot to take in. And if you do want to, we're looking for more members from the EA to sit on the Campus Welfare Committee. And I would love to have additional people. If you want any more information about that, see me after.
I'm Josh Cooley. I am one of the new members this term. I'm with Facilities and Campus Services. Been here a little over 2 years. I'm the manager of the Contract College Home Project. Like you, I'm taking it all in.
I'm Jen Michael. I'm the rep from AAP. I am both new to the assembly and new to Cornell, just 9 months. So I joined to try and learn more about this very big place. And this is really only my third meeting in the assembly, so I feel like you guys
do. Want me to respiel?
Sure.
So Mary Newhart, you just elected me as the College of Arts and Sciences representative. I've been at Cornell since 1985. I'll do the math. I was 12 when I started. Cornell's been really good to me, so I appreciate the opportunity to give something back to the community. To employ a degree, I was able to do both my undergraduate and graduate in ILR. I've worked in College of Arts and Sciences. I'm currently the assistant director for the Center for the Study of Inequality. Worked in the law school, worked in philosophy, I should also work with summer sessions. So I've gotten the opportunity to see a lot of campus. And I appreciate your election. I look forward to serving.
I'm Brandon Fortenberry. I am the Student Campus Life representative. I'm the director for Cornell Catering and Concessions. I've been at Cornell for just over 14 years. And I worked my way up from a union employee to being the director of catering. And so this has been an amazing place for me. I've had such amazing ability to grow and learn. And I really thought it important as I became able to see that growth in my career to find ways in which I can help others to find that same development. So I was really excited to join. I had a great opportunity today to sit in front of Ryan Lombardi's divisional leadership team and introduce myself as an employee facility representative. Student Campus Life is huge, as many of you may be aware, and it has so many different arms and umbrellas and things within it. So I'm just getting my head wrapped around how I engage with the constituents. But I think I'm somewhat positioned very uniquely in that I have a lot of interactions with so many of our divisions of Students Campus Life. So very excited to be a part of this. And I'm a new member as well. It's for about 3 months now.
So I'm Jack Creedy, and I'm officially representing College Catering Rising. And so the interest for me is inspired actually by how well the College Catering Rising tries to get all the different constituents here under their umbrella together and relating to each other and connecting not just themselves but their impact outside that college. It's a very big theme going on at the college, so I wanted to also assist in that and represent them here.
My name is Marcy Benda. I'm a women's representative at large, so that's a big constituency as well. I don't know how to reach everyone, but I work at the Veterinary College. I've been in the EA, this is my second year. I just recently became the chair of the Education Committee. I've been at Cornell for 19 years, always at the Vet College, so I didn't really see anything else outside of Vet College since I really joined EA. You don't really go down campus much, at least. And we refer to anything outside of the Vet College as down campus. So yeah, it's been a great experience.
Hi, I'm Emily Agri. I have been here for just over 11 years, always in the College of Engineering in the same department, Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering. I too have had a really great experience. I've been previous jobs before I came here, there are various struggles and there's so much incredible support here at Cornell. And I've been lucky enough to experience that. So I'm hoping to help other people at Cornell experience that if they're not. And I felt like it was a good time to give back to the community, represent the college.
Laura Taylor, I'm with the I'm the international rep at large. I'm with the Office of Global Learning International Services, senior associate director there. I work with international visitors on campus, many of whom are staff. Of course, the largest number are students, but we have a fair number of people who are here as staff who are international. I think I got interested. I'm new, and I'm still trying to figure out what I can do and how I can have an impact. But interested in how to leverage sort of the great resources of the institution to help assist or better represent the international population of staff here on campus, given that my own office is very limited in our staff resources. And so is there a way to sort of bring sit on this committee and think about ways that we might be able to help with some of the needs that our international staff here have through this
committee? I'm Jessica Withers, Library and Museum Representative and Chair of the Elections Committee. I'm also a new member, and basically I have been at Cornell for like 12 and a half years, and I'd already served on library committees
that were appropriate for my position. And so I've just been keeping an eye on the employee assembly until the library seat opened up and then ran this year. So all brand new. It's been a learning process very quickly. And I expect those are good days.
I'm Andrew Brooks, representative at large, also a Met College employee though. Been on the committee or the assembly a year and a half, I guess. Still learning. Also, I am on the, I take the EAC for the CJC, which Bob was talking about earlier.
Craig Wiggers, the veteran representative at large, and I've been on the EA for 2 years. Finished Cornell for 7, three of which were with ROTC, and then transitioned from the civilian side. Now I'm at the physics department.
My name is Chris Barth. I work at CIT. I represent IT tech transfer, which is like patents and research. I'm on the CPC. David doesn't steal my thunder. I'm willing to share it with everybody. I also want to recognize Jessica. We already had an election and it went very well. So like, great job, elections committee, because the elections committee is all the new people and all us old fogies are not allowed to be on it. It's my second year. I'm on the UA. I really drank the Kool-Aid and joined all of the clubs because I'm on the CPC, the CIC, the UA, the CWC. I'm on anything with an acronym. I'm on. Which, if I will, when you're new, there's a lot to know. So feel free to come talk to me, and I would encourage you. And I think everybody would say, make a buddy. Like, there will be questions you'll have as you miss the retreat, but we'll get you where you need to be.
Hi, I'm Kate Sucron, and I work in the Office of Community Relations, which is part of the Division of University Relations. I'm the Division of University Relations representative, and I've been at Cornell for 3 years. Ashley Miller, and I now serve the HR seat, so thank you very much. I was interested in joining the EA. I'm an Ithaca native, born and raised, and I just moved back about a year ago, and that's how long I've been at Cornell. And I just did not, or I did take it for granted growing up here and living here. So now that I'm back, I'm definitely ready to invest in the greater community, but in the Cornell community as well. So I was interested in joining a bigger body and being a louder voice to some quieter voices that are out there. So thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Hei DeVio. I am the less than 5 years of service rep, and I'm also the executive vice chair. I am really happy to be a part of the employee assembly. I think it's a really great opportunity to lend your voice, talk on some issues, and to work through, you know, things that you've seen rise up here in our staff community. So I'm really happy to start off this year. I hope that you guys feel free to get in touch if you have any questions, if you want any guidance. I feel like the entire executive team is here to assist, and hope we all have a great year. So. Thank you all, and welcome.
And Carrie?
Hey, I'm Carrie Sanzone. I have been at Cornell for a little over 16 years, and I've worked remotely, actually, for most of them, I think 13 years. So I don't know if I'm the only remote worker on the employee assembly. I might be. But anyway, I'm sitting in Orlando right now. So. Let's see, I work for University Relations. I'm part of the Central Web Communications Group. So I work on the main Cornell website and our video site, CU Info, and just a bunch of websites that you guys may or may not use. I hope you use them. And I'm, let's see, right now I'm an at-large rep, which means I don't have a college or unit seat or an affinity seat to represent everyone. And I'm vice chair for communications, as I mentioned before. So if anyone wants to join us, please let me know.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. So especially for the new members, what we've been trying to do over the last several meetings is have a little bit of time at the end, since this is our best opportunity for everybody to be in the same room, to have an open discussion period, and we do have about 10 minutes or so for that. So this is a time, if you have any questions or concerns, any ideas you want to throw out, we're at an open forum. I do have one announcement I want to make, and this just came to me yesterday. So Thursday, September 12th, from noon to 1, the Central Human Resources is putting together a focus group, and they've reached out to me to see if we could collect 6 or 10 volunteers. There will be lunch served, and basically it's essentially just like what you might think, a focus group about employee issues, the employee experience, things like that. I actually will probably send around a better synopsis of what the dialogue is going to be like, but if we can get a good group to go and take part in this, I think it would be, it's a good opportunity. So like I said, I'll follow up with this in one of the emails I send out to the entire body, but I just learned the details yesterday, so I wanted to announce it. Does anybody have anything they want to bring up to everybody?
Great. One thing that I want to thank you. One thing I'd like to ask us to think about, particularly within the Communications and Recognition Committee. Recently, back in April, there was an announcement about 2 faculty prizes for diversity and inclusion that are $15,000 a piece, recognizing faculty that are doing outstanding work in that specific area, which I applaud. I think that's fantastic. One of the issues as I've been thinking about that, though, is why is there not a similar recognition, maybe not of the same scale, but recognition towards staff that are doing a lot of the groundwork in diversity and inclusion areas across campus. We have many folks doing amazing work that should certainly be recognized. And this kind of ties into the President's Excellence Awards, and it's not to downgrade any of those, but I think this might be another opportunity to identify some folks that are doing some amazing things. And with that, one of the questions I have is, have all of the awards, aside from the Cook Award for women's work across campus, have they all gone to appreciation portal points? And if so, do we as an assembly want to ask the university to consider returning some of the recognition awards for staff to cash prizes, allowing staff to make the determinations on how they spend that recognition, whether it be through paying bills, paying for gas, and not necessarily just shopping at Amazon. So that's all I had. Thanks.
I think it ties into the core values as well.
Question.
Please.
So the Perkins Prize applies to staff, right?
I'm not sure. I've not heard of the Perkins Prize.
So the Perkins Prize is there's a Perkins Prize for FCL diversity and inclusion, and it's a $5,000 prize. I'm aware of the prize because I've had colleagues or staff who've won it.
Oh, fantastic.
So I know there is a prize that, based on exhibiting 12 criteria. So it's a Student and Campus Life Diversity Inclusion Award that staff members are eligible
for. Okay, and so that's across campus, not just to campus life.
Right.
Oh, at that's least, fantastic.
I believe it will. Well, maybe not. Okay, the Perkins Prize. I'd have to look it up, but my colleague who most recently won it was, I'm not sure if she was in Student Campus Life.
Okay.
So that it might be a Student Campus Life
Award. That's
awesome.
Award.
But anyway, there is good. At least that one award that I'm aware of. It's 5 years.
Okay, awesome.
Anyone else? Let's go with Chris.
This is a 10-minute thing. I'm going to tell you in 1 minute. The UA discussed and has been trying to send out a tobacco survey on campus. We're one of the few last campuses that don't have a tobacco ban or something. I'm speaking a little bit, stealing or sharing the thunder with David.
All good. We're all available.
after really working on this, the idea, the UA needs the EA's help, specifically Carrie's help and the communication team to make sure that we get this survey question in front of people. The survey is going to be sent out via Qualtrics, but the employees, where we're in the UA to fight to make sure the employees have the time, the things that are like the dining hall workers, the grounds workers, the hourly employees, the union, they don't spend a lot of time in front of their computer, and we're really worried that they're not going to be able to have their input taken into account. So what the UA motioned and passed yesterday was that we are sending out the survey from the UA, but the UA members need to get out in front of all these constituent groups in their town halls and say, there is a survey, go find it, here's the link. There is a problem with, there's no funding to do this in paper process. So we are going to rely on the EA's help, specifically to make sure the employees have their voices heard as robustly. And we can talk a little bit more in detail, but I wanted to bring it to everybody's attention that they don't have a great communications committee and team on the UA like we do. So we're going to need everybody's help with making sure all the employees have a voice in this area.
Because I have a lot of constituents that would fall into that category, something that might be helpful is having a QR code on any sort of advertisement that allows, because most of them have smartphones that aren't in front of computers, it allows them to quickly get to the survey. If it's a Qualtrics survey, those are really quick and easy. And I'd be happy to help with distributing that within the student campus.
Gina, did you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to introduce myself to the new folks. I'm Gina Giambattista. I'm the director of the Office of the Assemblies, and along with Sarah, and Kat, who is here as our clerk, we're here to support you all as the assembly, and have a lot of resources from within. But if there's ever anything that you have a question about, or you're working on something you just can't quite find the answer, our office is in Day Hall. We're in 109 Day Hall. We're assembly@cornell.edu, and that'll come to both Sarah and I. We're here to help you.
And I apologize. It's a good point to end on with my apology for not bringing that around. Sarah and Gina do incredible work to support all of us, and they really are a wonderful resource. So we're very lucky to have the support of the Office of the Assemblies. But again, I'm sorry for not introducing you. But with that, we're out of time for the day, so I'll go ahead and ask for a motion to adjourn. And a second. And. All right, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, our new members, and we'll see you soon.
Bye, everyone. Have a good week.
Be safe in Florida.
Oh, I will. We're good.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.